Good morning, beautiful people. I'm Jake Mintz.
And I'm Jordan Schusterman. On this special Friday edition of Baseball Barbercast, Jake is back and we're talking about Sacramento, California, as well as Miami, Florida for baseball reasons. That's because this is a baseball podcast.
Heat, Kings, after the break.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world, recording from the parking lot of an unidentified establishment. No free ads. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you back, Jake. We're not going to go through all of the madness that got you to this parking lot where you record this Friday edition of Baseball Barbercast, but it is nice to see you. And before we get into our Friday baseball chatter, how are you doing? I know if you're watching on YouTube, it doesn't look like Jake's doing the best, or like what he planned to be doing. But like, again, this is pretty standard operating procedure. I know it's been a long week for you for multiple reasons, but how are you doing? What's going on with you, man?
I'm going through it, Jordan. And sometimes in life, we go through it. You know, you don't always have your best stuff, you know, and this week, been fighting through, not to equate the passing of my grandma to a uncomfortable blister on my pitching hand, but that is certainly something that it feels like. It has been a long week here for the Mintz family. I appreciate a lot of the notes that I got. My grandma, if you're listening to this and you're like, Jake, didn't your grandma pass away around this time last year? Yes, that is true. My other grandma passed away on April 1st last year. And so that is why there might be a little bit of deja vu. But I'm back and I'm ready to do some podcasting. Jordan, how are you doing, man?
Yeah, you are. You sure are ready to do some podcasting. The amount of technical production and creativity that it took to get Jake. Again, we're not going to go into why Jake's recording from a parking lot. The point is we are here and we have baseball things to talk about, or at least as long as we can until someone tries to park next to Jake and then we have some issues. So our main topics today, here's going to be the rough run of show for this Friday morning. We are going to talk about the massive news that this indeed will be the Oakland A's final season in Oakland in 2024. Earlier this week with Russ, we of course talked about the Kansas City Stadium vote and gave a vague update on Oakland, but now we have some level of finality. So we're going to talk about the A's move to Sacramento. We're going to talk about the 0-8 Miami Marlins, who aren't even playing on Friday, so they have to go an extra day as a winless Major League Baseball team. So that's unfortunate. And then in the second half of the show, we are going to be doing the return of the good, the bad, the ugly. No shortage of ugly as Jake records this podcast in a parking lot. But Jake, let's begin in the capital city of California, in Sacramento. Yes, I remember when I was probably 5 or 6 years old and I was learning the state capitals and I found out that Sacramento was the capital of California. And I thought, what? I'm five. I don't know anything about Sacramento. Why isn't it Los Angeles?
You know, when you're five and you're learning the state capitals. But then after you learn about the state capitals and you learn about Chris Webber and Peja Stojakovic and Mike Bibby, you become well acquainted with the city of Sacramento. And now, as it pertains to our baseball brains, Sacramento will be sort of a big league city with the Oakland A's officially. I mean, nothing is really official with these Oakland A's because it's all such an S show. But the Oakland A's are set to spend 2025, 2026, 2027 with an option year. Gotta love it. Player a stadium option for 2028. This was announced yesterday at Sutter Health Park, which is the AAA stadium for the Sacramento River Cats, who are the affiliate for the San Francisco Giants. That is where the Oakland A's will be playing their games in this very much literally a AAA stadium. Jordan Schusterman, there are many layers to this story. Where would you like to begin?
Let's start with the very obvious part, big picture that we've already been saying since this saga, or since we've been covering the saga. Obviously, this goes back years and years before we were podcasting, years and years before any of us were talking about this as a regular Major League Baseball story. This is horrible. This is incredibly, before the Sacramento part, the A's, Oakland losing the A's is a very sad thing. It is a thing that is, while we have grown to accept it as reality over the last, you know, few years, does not make it any better. And I think back to the podcast we recorded with Mark Carrig last year, and just kind of how someone who, you know, grew up in the Bay and just what the team means to them, and just hearing from those people and understanding, let alone the fans that are still in Oakland and has still been supporting this team when they've been good, when they've been bad. It is a baseball and kind of local tragedy that this is how we got here. Okay, so that's before. This is not saying anything about Sacramento, anything about Vegas. Let's just start with that. That is where I am still feeling today, as we have some level of finality that this will be the last season of Oakland A's baseball in Oakland.
I think any relocation has an element of that baked into it inherently, right? And it's tough for me to speak about that just because this, the last time an MLB team relocated, we were 9 or 10, and it relocated to where we were growing up, right? And so you and I, when we were kids, were Sacramento, and we were like, this is awesome. This is amazing. Now, someone who's older can correct me if I'm wrong. Like, the A's relocation feels particularly insulting with how it has been handled. And I think that any decision that is made by the A's organization and Sacramento and Vegas slots into a larger pattern of behavior that has disregarded the fans that have been dedicated to this team for 50 plus years. And I think what I hate about that is, okay, you could talk about it from like, yes, it's capitalism, and yes, like, they are choosing to move to somewhere where they think they can make more money, right? But these people have been making you rich. The fans in Oakland have been buying tickets and watching games and leading to the TV revenue and buying jerseys for the last, like, for decades. And the idea that there's just the total disregard of that is so beyond insulting, whether it's turning off the replies on their tweets, whether it's not opening the park until an hour before, whether it's fielding a team that stinks, right? Like, that is the number one thing that needs to be talked about before Sacramento. And we just, you know, like, we feel terrible for Oakland. The city of Oakland has lost 3 teams in the last 10 years, right?
It's been insult after insult, just the way that it's been, you know, publicly handled. And so now, but, you know, as you mentioned at the start, like, how and when they actually get to Vegas, as evidenced by the option year, as evidenced by the fact that it is still so unclear when and how and where the stadium is being built and what it's going to look like, all those things. The point is that now this is something that is actually happening. Like, I do believe the A's are going to play their first game in Sacramento next year. And so that is why we have to, yeah.
I agree with you. But with John Fisher, the owner of this team, nothing is certain. It is a clown show. It is a circus act. And so until I see the A's playing game in Sacramento, it's hard for me to believe it.
That's fair. Now, to that point, though, let's get to why this is happening to begin with. Okay. Specifically, why Sacramento? Okay. Vivek Ranadive, who owns the Kings and 2 years ago purchased the River Cats, was
you
very
know when you're just hanging out with the boys, Jordan.
Yeah.
And you're like, what if we bought the River Cats? You ever been there?
I know. We sit around all the time talking about, you know, buying minor league teams.
I wish.
And then turning them into a temporary home for a major league ballpark. Now, we joke, but it does seem to be now for the lack of ever amount of public transparency we have gotten from John Fisher, at this press conference yesterday at Sutter Health Ballpark, and through various interviews, Vivek Ranadive was very, very transparent about how and why this happened and what he hopes to accomplish with this. And the two main points, and this is, of course, from the fantastic reporting from Evangelic and Ken Rosenthal, as well as all the media on the ground there in Sacramento who asked Ranadive these questions, here are the two main things to take away from how this happened, okay? The first is that these are just, as is, this is how it works in, America when you're this level of wealthy, is that generally you are going to be friends with the other people of that level of wealthy, right? And
you're
so
you're in group chats. You're in group chats right. with
exactly
you and the boys just owning clubs out here.
Yes. And so this is a very key thing. Now, obviously, the A's for years now have been looking at all these alternatives, and I'm sure that they have thought at some point of Sacramento as some sort of option. However, I think it is interesting that Ranadive said that he first brought up the idea of the A's playing in Sacramento, okay, probably now around the time, either shortly before or shortly after he bought the team, right? And Ranadive gives this quote, "John is a friend. He and I chat often. We both have homes in Cabo." Oh, so relatable. So I see him there.
Whoa. He said that?
This is a direct quote. Okay, I'm going to read this
quote. Ranadive said, "We both have homes in Cabo."
Let me read this again. Quote, "John is a friend. He and I chat often. We both have homes in Cabo. So I see him there and I've been friends with him and his family for many years. So we'd sit around the beach chatting. It's not something I could tell you. This was the date I first talked to him. I came to my team and I asked them, hey guys, do you think that while they're doing the move, we could actually have a Major League Baseball team here? And my team, no matter what I asked them, the answer is always yes. And they said, yeah, we could do that. So I pitched it to John, said, hey John, why don't you just have them play in our stadium while you're building the stadium? He came to a game here. He was just blown away by what we saw, what we had done in Sacramento with the Golden One Center, where the Kings play, and just how every game is sold out. So what this narrative that he is spinning here is that Vivek was just like, hey, my rich friend, John, needs some help. I just bought this team. And what are they going to tell me? No, I'm in charge and I get to tell people what to do. We're going to bring Major League Baseball here. Okay. At least
why did they just put the team in Cabo, dude?
I know. I think the players would love that. They're already going there all the time.
To get married. So every big leaguer gets married in Cabo.
So that's the first true. That's the first thing with this is like Vivek being like, yeah, like we're buds and I wanted to help him out. And I thought it was a cool opportunity because Vivek has obviously with the Kings and just in that he has made it his thing to like become the Sacramento guy. Okay. Which gets to the next big point here. This is another incredible thing that he said out loud for some reason. Okay. Because again, it's like, okay, well, Vivek, like really, what are you getting out of this, right? Like what is, obviously you have a major league team and there's money involved, whatever. He said this, the longer term play is that I have been having conversations with Major League Baseball and with Rob Manfred. They will introduce two new franchises, one in the West and one in the East. I think we're really in pole position to get the one in the West. So this for us is a showcase. Okay, so here we go. Again, like unbelievable amounts of honesty here for better or for worse, where he's basically being like, I want an expansion team in Sacramento. When the A's move to Vegas, we want to be in position to have a Major League Baseball team here. Now, what ballpark that would be in, who knows, whatever. But the point is, this is for Vec. He's just like, oh, great. We'll just get to have Major League Baseball here in Sacramento, and I'll pay for all the whatever, millions of dollars of stadium upgrades required to have Major League Baseball in the stadium and the team that I just bought. Does it screw the Giants? Who cares? Like, I'm in charge now. What are you going to do? Like, you have no choice. Like, this is a situation where rich people come together and say, this is a business decision that works for us, and we're just going to pound it through. And at this point, I'm sure the commissioner's office is like, well, what? Like, we need to have some sort of resolution, so we just have to move forward and hope that it's going
to
work.
What's important to understand, right, is there was no good outcome here. Once the A's made the decision to leave Oakland and made that public and they couldn't play in Vegas, they didn't have a good choice. There was no good choice because either they could have stayed in Oakland. And I mean, the first week of this season has shown that is not a viable path forward, right? They could have gone to Vegas in the short term, but that was never going to happen because they would not have gotten the TV money because they'd be going out of their market area. So the only way to do this was to go to Sacramento. Like it does make the most sense of the bad options that the A's had in front of them. But then again, it is, oh, wow, I'm reaping what I sow. Like I don't really have any sympathy for that, just to be clear. But it does make sense that this is where they ended up. And just the idea of the showcase, I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong. You follow the NBA closer than I do. But after, I might be getting some of this dreadfully incorrect. After Hurricane Katrina, when the New Orleans Hornets spent some time in Oklahoma City, I would imagine that that time was vital in getting the Sonics to move to Oklahoma City to prove that that was a viable market in the NBA. And so the idea of using your city as a temporary showcase to get a permanent franchise is not something new in professional sports in America.
Right. And again, of course, it is convenient that John Fisher has this, you know, rich friend hanging out in Sacramento that can kind of make all this happen. Because again, that's how we finally ended up at a solution. They were still negotiating with the city of Oakland to either extend the lease of the Coliseum and whatnot, which obviously did not seem like a tenable option. And I would guess that Major League Baseball was saying behind closed doors, do whatever you can to not play baseball in the Coliseum anymore. Right. And maybe there was some deal that they would have taken, whatever, but it seemed like they were committed to getting the hell out of there after this season. And so to that, but again, like, I just think that to your point, and clearly, as Vivek is very clearly stating, there's no secrets about this. It's not just like, yeah, I'm doing him a solid. Like, no, like, I'm thinking bigger picture here. I'm trying to get an expansion franchise. And now, which brings us to the actual reality of what this is going to look like, of which that is a whole other podcast and how we're going to actually cover this, which is that a Major League ballpark will be, you know, 14,000 people, and it is a Triple A ballpark, so it's not a Major League ballpark. I don't care how nice they make the clubhouses, you know, behind what people are actually seeing. And as far as that goes, like, it's interesting because on one hand, it's like, this is not a Major League ballpark. On the other hand, at this point, barely is the Coliseum, you know? And so is this actually, I'm sure there's parts about this that the players are like, okay, great. And I'm sure there's parts about this that the players and their families are like, this is terrible. Why are we doing this? I'm sure, again, we're going to learn all about that over the next year or so. So I don't think the players want to speak to that.
Yeah, I don't think anybody knows about that aspect to it. I think what we know is that it is not a Major League ballpark right now. The like CEO or president of the Rivercats said like on record like a week ago that the ballpark is not fit for MLB play. And so there will be upgrades that will have to happen to it in the next couple of days. But and this is the last thing I'll say before we make jokes about the Sacramento A's not being the Sacramento A's. John Fisher has concocted this cockamamie plan here, right? I do not trust this guy as a businessman. To me, it's that simple. He has proven himself incapable of making a Major League Baseball team financially successful and lucrative and sustainable. I have no faith that he is going to be able to maintain this club in Sacramento and then move them to Vegas. Like, and maybe he does it, maybe he pulls it off. But like, why are we trusting this guy? He is a dope. These other owners are, a handful of them, are at least competent at business, okay? Say what you want about, you know, the morality of owning a baseball team, whatever. Like, they make money. John Fisher has proven himself unable to do that. And so the whole thing is colored in skepticism for me.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. The last thing on this too, just because it obviously got a lot of attention before we move to the Marlins. And by the way, this extends right to Dave Cavill and just like all of the other A's leadership adjacent people that have just, there's no reason. We apply this to a lot of things in baseball, whether it's more like literally baseball related things where it's like you don't have the benefit of the doubt because you've been bad at this for so long. We talk about that with like the White Sox. We talk about that with the Nationals.
The Marlins developing hitters.
We'll get to the Marlins here in a bit. With the Rockies, right? Like at some point, and some of these things have way bigger impact on the actual experience of the fans and of the people, of the players, whatever. But to your point, why would we trust them? There's no reason to. However, the last bit that we have to acknowledge is just like how they were selling this, because obviously if you're going to hold a press conference, you need to have some sort of spin, right? So in addition to the concept of finality and what Dave Cavill kept saying over and over afterwards, which there is some truth to this, that doesn't make it any less crappy, but there is some truth to this, which is that we actually know what is going to happen now, roughly, okay, with all the caveats we already gave. The spin was, this will be the most intimate Major League viewing experience around, and that Ronadive is saying it'll be the most sought after ticket because to exact quote John Fisher, Being able to watch some of the greatest players in baseball, whether they be athletics players or Aaron Judge and others, hitting home runs out of the most intimate ballpark in all of MLB for the next 3 years.
Aaron Judge, come to my house and have sex with my wife. Like, what? Why are we promoting this? Why are you like it's outrageous to me, right? Like, boy, can't wait to go to the yard and watch my team get pummeled by the Yankees.
Ron Adive also said, referenced Ohtani. Oh, you can watch Judge and Ohtani. Now, credit to Vivek. He did say, like, oh, look out. We'll have Zach Geloff at second base. Again, going back to the renderings, Zach Geloff is like their pride
again,
and joy.
Jordan,
he's
Vivek is a real boy. He is I know you have not seen Succession, but there is a scene in Succession where Logan Roy says to his kids, I love you, but you are not serious people. Okay. John Fisher, you are not serious people. Vivek seems like somewhat of a serious people. Okay. And so at least he has the competence to say a current A, right? Like, also, Ohtani is going to play how many games in Sacramento? Six? Three? It could be three. It could literally be three.
Yeah. Now, and as for, again, what they're selling, again, none of this overrides any of the actual larger context of it. It'll be weird, man. It'll be really weird. And, like, I will say, from the concept of, like, intimate, whatever that means, like, Major League Baseball in a smaller setting, I will say, and of course you have in spring training, whatever, there is something, this is not, again, this doesn't make any of this okay, but I am curious what they do about it or if they change things, because, like, I would say when I think like baseball, I think about the Little League Classic, which is not something that a lot of people have gotten to attend,
so,
right?
Let's be clear. There is a way to make that experience interesting and unique and worth seeing that does not make it good. That does not make it like a positive thing that is happening to the sport or to the Oakland fan base. That, again, theme of the pod, multiple things can be true. Like, that's true. And also, like, I want to go see a game in Sacramento to see what the hell it looks like.
Exactly, right. And also, this also applies back to when we first started talking about all this, you know, however many years ago. I'm not going to be angry at the people of Las Vegas or whatever who, like, want to get into this team, or the people of Sacramento who are now going to get to go watch Major League Baseball, you know, down the street. You know, that's that in the lower bowl, whatever. And I'm just, most importantly, I'm just so interested to see how right and how wrong they are about what they actually are able to make this look like. Because the reality is, it also might just end up feeling like minor league baseball with major league players. And that's not good for the product which you're trying to see.
We love minor league baseball. We love it. Okay. We do. But there are 30 teams that should not be minor league baseball teams. Okay. They are major league baseball teams. And that's the point. And this is kind of related to the jerseys. Like, you're cheapening the experience. Right. You want the guys in the big leagues to feel like they are in the big leagues. You want it to look like the big leagues. And this entire thing that John Fisher has done is just so definitively not big leagues. Let's pivot to more AAA baseball, where the Miami Marlins are 0-8 to start the year.
Yeah. Okay. So this has the feeling of, there's a lot of things going on here. The Marlins are 0-8. They're the only winless team left. They are in St. Louis, where they had a lead on Thursday, and then they didn't. Now they have this weird off day Friday, because they build in these off days for the home openers or whatever, so they would not play again until Saturday. They're the first team to start 0-8 since the 2016 Braves and Twins, who lost 93 and 103 games, respectively.
That's
now, what
a bad
this
sign.
Is making me think... Yeah, That's go a- ahead.
That's a bad sign?
Bad sign for sure.
Okay.
Now, I would say what this is feeling like is the Reds from a couple years ago, where you looked at the roster and you're like, they're not that bad. And then a few injuries and a cold stretch later, and you're like, oh, we're 3-22. Like, you wake up and you're 3-22. Now, the Marlins are not 3-22 yet. And 0-8, I guess, while it is not a good sign, sure, it's just eight games, whatever. However, with the news of Yuri Perez undergoing Tommy John surgery, news that I have quite literally been dreading since I read the first sentence about Yuri Perez 3 or 4 years ago, that, oh my God, there's this 6'7" teenager throwing 97 and he's the most coordinated, amazing pitcher we've ever seen. And I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. I hope he can get to the major leagues healthy. And he did, and then he didn't. And you can say, oh, they did him carefully. They were cautious. They held back his innings. They did all these things. Listen, throwing baseballs is dangerous. When you're gigantic and you're throwing 100, it's extra dangerous and you're young and you have it. The Marlins didn't do anything wrong. Yuri Perez didn't do anything wrong. This is the nature of this position and this job. It sucks. It's a huge bummer. And for someone who, of course, arguably one of my three favorite pitchers in the world to watch when he debuted last year, this is horrible news that obviously we've become very used to, unfortunately, with young pitchers recently, but that doesn't make it any less, doesn't make it suck any less. Now, that is an important part of this larger story, but I'll let you comment on Perez first.
Oh, no, I have nothing else. Like, when a guy's elbow goes kablooey, like, there's really no take, but, oh, that sucks. Like, the one thing I think about, though, is we have no idea. We really, it seems like we don't know. Just let guys pitch. Like, let's like pull back on the innings limits within reason. And like, let's just let the young guys cook because we're all going to die eventually. As far as it pertains to the Marlins specifically, like, I feel so bad for Marlins fans who got like just the smallest little taste of success last year before like it all went downhill. And because I just think the new front office is going to use this to rip everything up from the studs and just press reset and like trade everyone. I mean, we've seen what a Marlins fire sale looks like before, and I think we might see it again. However, for the 29 other ball clubs, we got a seller at the deadline, baby.
Deadline. We might not make it. Woo! I mean, are these players going to make it to the end of July? I don't know. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, we have some reporting that the Padres were already coming after Lizardo before they got Cease. They're asking about a rise, asking about some other guys. Again, like, this is a situation where this team was supposed to be built around pitching, and you lose Perez. Braxton Garrett and Edward Cabrera are both dealing with shoulder issues. Now, they're rehabbing and are trying to come back, but they have not pitched yet this season. Sandy obviously already out. So now you have a rotation that is four lefties, Lizardo, Puck's not great, Rogers, Weathers, Max Meyer. Max Meyer back, he looks good. So that's been nice.
Ryan Weathers, got to say, he's throwing 98.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all still throwing hard. Hand, and like there's still good pitchers in this organization. But because of the offense is just so imbalanced and so unproven, it does seem that even before all of these injuries, they were ready to take a step back. And for Peter Bendix, and obviously you bring in the guy from the Rays, unfortunately, you have so many owners being like, oh, let's just get the guys that can do it for cheap. That's not a one-year process. Now, the question is this going to be a really deep rebuild, or is this a situation where we flip Tanner Scott and Tim Anderson and Josh Bell our rentals, and we hope that all of our guys come back healthy and we have this awesome rotation in 2025, 2026, whatever. I still have the question of how do you score runs? This team's been so bad at developing hitters, drafting, acquiring, signing, the whole nine yards, that like how are you going to compete in this division? And I've said this about the Nationals. The only way you're going to compete in the NL East is to get good at everything else before you even start spending. And it seems that Peter Bendix has been brought in to improve everything else. That is not something you can do in one season. And unfortunately for Marlins fans, again, we're going to always be thinking about the fans before everything, if not most things. It just sucks to have what you had last year, even if we knew it was a bit of a mirage, to feel like it was a step in the towards competing and towards a commitment to winning, to now have these injuries. And what I think is going to happen is they're just going to totally blow it up is really, really, really unfortunate.
You know what team could use a shortstop? The Cleveland Guardians.
Do they need a shortstop?
Tim Anderson, Jose Ramirez on the left side of the infield together. I
feel pretty good that is the one team Tim Anderson will not be traded to. But if he gets traded elsewhere, we will see. Arise, Lizardo, all these guys.
Anytime a team starts off slow like this, you just got a whole club of future Yankees hanging out. You know, producer Andrew Hartz loves that.
Well, it's and remember, which reminds me, they already traded John Birdie. We never even acknowledged that. And I know that doesn't feel like that big of a deal, but he was like their longest tenured player. And
you don't
trade
a useful guy like John Birdie if you think your team's going to bang.
Yeah, they're already, and that was before the season even started, right? Or at least was like a day into it. So that was, and they're trading him for A-ball prospects, right? So we're trying to, clearly this is going to get a lot more dramatic. Are they the worst? Now, again, they can play themselves into that bottom three of Colorado, Oakland, and the White Sox. And 0-8 is a nice way to do that. So it sucks. I feel bad for Skip. I feel bad for a lot of the players who thought they had really turned a corner here with this organization in terms of winning. And we'll see if they can climb their way out of it and have, you know, a respectable season. Because what sucks is that regardless of their hopes of making the playoffs, which are obviously, we're already low, I just hope this doesn't torpedo any progress from Jazz individually, any progress from some of these young pitchers, because it's just going to be a crappy environment because you start 0-8 and you know your team isn't actually trying to win. It's just not really a place that you want to be.
All right, let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we will do the good, the bad, and the ugly. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. I'm out of the parking lot and back of my car, but you don't care about that. You're just here to listen about baseball. And we have good news for you because this is the return of the good, the bad, and the ugly, our favorite segment that we do on this podcast. The concept is painfully simple and unbelievably stupid. One thing from the week that is good, one thing that is bad, and one thing that is Dan Ugla, weird, bizarre, somehow out of the ordinary. Jordan Schusterman, I will kick you the rock. Let's get it started. What was good this week for you?
What was good this week for me? I am going to go with Juan Soto and Gleyber Torres getting a haircut at 3 a.m. This is something that you probably missed, but the Yankees, of course, returning back to New York after their series in Arizona and in Houston, and they have their home opener today on Friday. And Gleyber Torres posted a Instagram story at 3 a.m. of him at the very baseball famous Jordan MVP barbershop, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Of course.
As this guy is the guy who cuts literally like every big leaguer's hair. But I just love, like, this is truly as big league as it gets, right? Like, you get back from a long road trip, and like, if you're a big league, this is the kind of thing that you get when you're a major league, especially when you're a Yankee, right? You need a haircut 24/7. I got you covered. And I love that it's just you posting this picture, just being like, yep, getting a haircut. It's 3 a.m. No problem.
Well, Jordan, you know, New York City, you can get anything you need at any hour. That's like a whole draw living there. And if you're Juan Soto, that I guess extends to haircuts. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Has Soto been in New York this winter? Is there a chance that he never even came up to the city?
That is a very interesting question.
I would assume he did to like get settled and figure out where he's going to live, but there's a chance he didn't. But I do love, like, you land, you go right to the barber. I am going to just tell a quick story. My senior year of college, when we were playing, we had a freshman who I will keep unnamed, batting, I think, sixth in the lineup for his debut. He went 0 for 2 with 2 strikeouts in his first 2 at-bats, got pulled, didn't play again, and he was so up in his own head that we got back to campus at 4 a.m., and he went right to the indoor batting cage. And that is very different than Juan Soto and Gleyber Torres getting a haircut in the middle of the night, but it just reminded me of that.
Well, if the Yankees had a worse road trip, you know, it's possible Soto would have gotten back and went straight to Yankee Stadium and get some swings. But instead, they're chilling. They're feeling good. They're like, let's go get cleaned up before the home opener. What's good for you this week, Jake?
All right. For my good, I would like to talk about Mr. Splash. For those of you who don't know about Mr. Splash, let me educate you. The Orioles have a gentleman who, let me back up, actually. The Orioles, for some reason, are water-themed. They have water-themed celebrations, and they have someone named Mr. Splash who sits in a section in the outfield and sprays fans with water whenever they score or like hit an extra base hit. And This is relevant this week because the Orioles won on a walk-off against the Royals after like a five-hour rain delay. And there were like, you know, 1,500 people left in the stadium because it was a Wednesday night rain-delayed game against the Royals with a major bridge being out that has fluffed up traffic in Baltimore. And so you had these wet, cold fans celebrating a walk-off underneath a hose, and it was just like, would you like to be more wet? It reminded me of when teams water the field after a rain delay because the tarp was on top of it. Just the juxtaposition of like a rain delayed soggy game and more water was hilarious. Shouts out to James McCann for making that moment possible.
Totally. Yeah. We had a few like rain related sparse ballparks. This is things we have in April often, but the energy of those games is always just a little off and sometimes a good, sometimes a bad way. But I agree. That also, I would say, qualifies Ugla, but I do agree that that is good. My bad this week, Jake, is kind of everything involved with Shohei Ohtani's first home run, except for him hitting it, which was good. I don't want to go too far down this road, but the mess involving the person that caught the ball and the way that the Dodgers handled it involved with basically saying we won't authenticate it and you need to give this up to us as soon as possible. Now, it seems like the fan is totally fine with how this went down at the end of the day because they recognize that it is a special moment for Ohtani. But then after, we have Ohtani saying, or through his translator saying, I met the fan and, you know, we got the ball back. It was nice.
That's not what he said, to be clear. Ohtani said, I talked to the fan.
Yeah. Which, so, well, but
Ohtani,
but
it's unclear what he meant, but I'm going to just kindly think he said, like, I communicated with the fan.
Listen, this is what is bad about this is that, unfortunately, what is, and this is why I, this has really been frustrating, the way that we are handling things that Ohtani says beyond this situation and people choosing to just pick whatever interpretation and rely on, like, listen, there are Japanese speakers, obviously, that are going to understand what he's saying a lot more clearly. And those are people that we should trust. Will Ireton is also doing his best to communicate something. There is nuance to all of this, and we need to stop going and coming up with these grand conclusions about things that he is or isn't saying, because this is not easy, and interpretation is a very nuanced thing, and people that do not speak Japanese, let's all take a breather and just let's take a step back, okay? Let's take a step back and not assume that there's any sort of obfuscation or this was a messy situation. It's all going to be okay. Let's just take a breath. Okay. We are not, I just feel so uncomfortable with the degree to which we are full steam ahead and deciding things that Ohtani didn't say. It is not a pleasant thing. And I think we all need to be patient and sensitive with translation related issues. So that is why I'm saying it is bad, because it is frustrating for me to watch.
I will take the uniforms.
Those are bad. Yeah.
They look great. I would say that, yeah, we've talked about the uniforms at length, and I tweeted this. I was just looking forward to not thinking about them and getting used to them, and I have not done that. They just look so not major league and are a total embarrassment and cheapen the product. And they're not actually a conversation within the clubhouse as much as you'd expect. Like, players are not. They don't feel as uncomfortable as maybe we thought. And the pant fits, while still a problem, are not as that's been improved just by tailoring the pants a little bit. But like, they just look like crap, dude. They look like crap. And the sweat stains are hilarious because it's April. And like, how are these sweat stains going to play once we get like further on in the season when it's like actually hot outside? And it's just such an easy thing to fix. Just put the big numbers on the back, use the old jerseys. It was not a problem. Like, it wasn't like these uniforms were an issue and Nike swooped in like a superhero and saved us from the old uniforms. Like, we were doing fine. And it's clear that the only reason they changed it is to save money and make more money, which, like, okay, whatever, they're a company, that's what they do. But like, it's just to cheapen the whole experience. Maybe we won't notice by June and we'll stop whining about this, and that's what they're hoping for. But just to see it on the grand stage was just very disappointing and bad.
Yeah, I agree. And I do think that the reporting from Stephen Nesbitt is valuable in that I think one detail that I appreciated was that Fanatics took over several years ago and continued producing things exactly as it always had been. So this is not a situation where, like, this was a deliberate choice for reasons that can only be explained by, to your point, statement, because it's not like years ago had players been begging for performance, better performance materials. Has that been something that players have been asking for? Like, I don't think so. And yet that's how it's being spun by MLB, by Nike, is that this is performance wear. This is the best version. This, it's like, okay, well, but who asked for that? Nobody. So if that's your reasoning for making this a cheapened product, that is obviously really disappointing. So I agree. That is indeed bad. My ugly this week is probably the highlight slash low light slash weird light that you definitely missed while you were out. And that is Byron Buxton almost being run over by the Bratwurst race in Milwaukee.
What?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So again, I know you're in a car, so maybe you can't pull up this clip. But if you do, if you can pull up this clip, it is pretty significant. Cut for tweeting this out. And the reason why I'm putting this under ugly is obvious. I mean, a player getting run over by a mascot race in 99% of cases, if they were not injured, would be funny. However,
oh my God.
I was not amused to see Byron Buxton, who finally appears to be healthy, almost get trampled by a large sausage. That was a troubling sight. Now, thankfully, Byron Buxton had a great attitude about it. He was making jokes about it after the game. And it is an incredible clip because does get out of harm's way. But in addition to the obvious takeaway of, oh my God, Byron Buxton, this would be an unbelievable way for him to get hurt again. The second take is, I am kind of surprised that near collisions like this don't happen more when you consider the timing of these races and how they work. Like, they happen between innings. They run past the dugout at full speed in suits where they can't actually fully see. Like, I'm surprised
we
don't have
those suits on. We've worn those suits. They're very clumsy.
It's not an easy situation. So I guess I was just surprised that I haven't seen more collisions or near misses like this before.
Yeah, there's so much about this that's funny. Like, in one way, it's like, look both ways before you cross the street, right? On the other hand, it's like,
track.
On the other hand, this is not a street that you cross, right? You never, when you run out to the field as a baseball player, you don't have to look both ways because you're not expecting a sausage to come hurtling down at you. Right now, I think Buxton deserves some credit. I mean, obviously, it's good to know that he's athletic enough to avoid this, but I think the sausage deserves some credit here too. I mean, the sausage, I mean, he's got makes a late maneuver to kind of swerve around Buxton. Oh my, could you have imagined?
No, you're right. There was like a stutter step to kind of slow down.
The sausage was a problem in the open field. I mean, also the idea that like this was Buxton, like the most injury prone player maybe we have in baseball, was the one who almost got run over by the sausage is just cruel.
That was obviously my first takeaway. Dan Hayes reporting after the game about just this hilarious exchange between...
This
happens when you're in the clubhouse. Exchange between Byron Buxton and Ryan Jeffers. And Jeffers said, as long as he's okay. I mean, the Bratwurst is okay. And then Buxton goes, the Bratwurst, what about me? And then Buxton says, this is a great quote, that was a train collision because if I took out one, I'm taking out at least two more. I was like, yep. So anyway, I love that Buxton is not like worried. He's like, yeah, no, I would have taken out the sausages. I'm like, no, dude, we're worried about you. Anyway, all right, that's my ugly. What's your ugly? Then we can say goodbye.
I don't really have one, to be honest with you. I don't think I picked one. I don't have anything sketched out for you.
I'll loan one to you. Do you want me to loan you one?
You loan me one?
All right, here's one. The Angels fans, according to a tweet that has gone rather viral, are vaguely planning on giving Anthony Rendon a standing ovation when he makes his debut at home this weekend. How do you feel about that?
So obviously this is derivative of the Trey Turner standing O. And I like it. I think this is a good move by the Angels fans because it gives them the moral high ground moving forward. Now, I don't think that that is necessarily their motive here. Maybe they are just kind-hearted people who want to cheer on a member of their team. However, if they give the standing ovation to Anthony Rendon and he kind of poo-poos it and brushes it off and continues to suck and show no zip, then the Angels fans are standing on very solid ground when they, you know, call him a bum or whatnot. Whereas, like, Trey Turner last year, there's so much precedent. Trey Turner handled the standing O perfectly, right? He seemed genuinely touched by it. Whether or not his play, like, his play turned around immediately, which was unbelievable and not replicable.
Right.
But at the very least, if Rendon says, you know, it was very meaningful for me to see that. I've had a tough couple of years, and to see the fans support me, that's great. If Rendon says that, we could all move forward with smiles on our faces for now. Or if Rendon goes, yeah, I didn't even notice. Like, then Angels fans can just really let it eat on Anthony Rendon.
Right. That's the thing is, to me, it's like the contrast of like the way that Rendon has kind of communicated to the public versus the way that Trey was very, very clearly going through it and then appreciated the support. However, listen, regardless of what we think about Rendon, who is hitless this season so far, batting leadoff for some reason, we are never going to tell people to boo players. So I'd rather people cheer players how much they're good or not. Like, that's fine, right?
Unless you did crimes.
Okay, yes. But my point is like, it's not like I want to tell people, yo, no, go boo Rendon, he deserves it. No, but I am interested how he responds to this. Not even on the field. I am curious how he, because of the way that he has communicated publicly about his commitment and interest in playing baseball for the Los Angeles Angels, I'm very interested, and the fans, right? Like, I am very curious if this happens. It's possible this is just like not a thing that anyone will notice because it is in this Twitter bubble. Very possible too. But if this does become a thing, I'm very curious how he reacts to it after the fact.
I came up with an ugla.
Okay.
So you get a bonus ugla this week, my friends. Edwin Diaz. Edwin Diaz, before the season, on this podcast, we made note of how many times would Edwin Diaz come out in a non-save situation to the trumpets and how awkward would that be? And we are already at 3 Edwin Diaz appearances with the trumpets, none of which have been in save situations. Edwin Diaz coming back and looking more or less, I know his velocity was a little bit down yesterday, more or less like Edwin Diaz. He's had three appearances. He's struck out 5 guys. He hasn't allowed a run, just 1 base runner. Like, to have the Edwin Diaz show back and for the Mets
It's been exactly like, and by the way, especially during in an empty ball, I know this was because it was a rain delayed doubleheader, whatever.
The one yesterday was wild.
One yesterday in like a soggy, empty city field in a non-safe situation. It was just like, man, Edwin is so cool and this is so not cool. But hey, Mets fans, let's end on a good note.
That's Pete, a dub.
Saving your ass. You're no longer winless. That was a ridiculous home run off his former Florida Gator teammate, who was very confused how that ball went over the fence. Mets coming to Cincinnati this weekend. We'll see if they can kind of get back on the horse here. But yeah.
Let me be clear about something. We want Edwin Diaz, sold out stadium, Mets competitive, trumpets blaring. That, what a summer that was, right? What a thing we were fortunate enough to witness. I don't know if we'll get that this year, but it certainly is a beautiful sight. I also think it's awesome to just watch the comic tragedy that is
How long before we get one? I know they're going on the road now for a while, so we'll keep an eye on that, but I agree that is definitely fits in our ugly category.
The Mets do not play the Marlins until Friday, May 17th. So circle that on your calendars.
Oh God.
The fight for fourth.
I just hope after what happened last year that it's not raining for Skip Schumacher's sake. All right. We're done. We did a podcast. Jake, you have fulfilled your obligation here.
Barely.
Despite the technical challenges, the creativity I appreciate for sure. God bless our producers, Andrew Hartz, Brett Rader. You guys are saints for dealing with us on many levels. We appreciate it. We hope Andrew Hartz can enjoy a wonderful Yankees home opener. Jake, thank you. It's nice to have you back. We'll be back on Monday for special Eclipse edition of Baseball Barbacast. Excited to talk about that. But until then, we hope everyone has a wonderful weekend And we'll talk to you all soon. Oh, yeah.
Very briefly, I just want to say thank you to all the people who reached out about the passing of my grandmother. I put this on Instagram, but if you've ever listened to the pod and you've heard me do the Grandma Jake, Jordan, that voice is directly derived from my lovely Grandma Sandy, who grew up a long toss throw away from Ebbets Field in Brooklyn, born in 1935. I cannot say that she was a baseball fan, but in some ways I am thankful for that because I would have been a Mets fan. Like if my grandma had been a diehard ball lover, that would have created some tension in my family. Would I have been a Mets fan or Orioles fan? And I think I'm happy that I'm an Orioles fan and not a Mets fan, I have to say, just based upon a variety of factors. No offense to the Mets. Seems like a great culture. You all seem very happy. Kind of. But yes, that voice was just the beginning of what my grandma gave me. And it was a very long and arduous week. And last couple years, I spent a lot of time kicking it with her in the upper West Side. And so it's good to have the baseball world and community kind of giving a large hug whenever something bad happens in our actual lives. And I apologize to those listening for the schwachness, the shoddiness of maybe this podcast. But Jordan and I have always been upfront with you, the listeners. We are real people. We at times do not have our lives and our things and our S together. And so when that is the case, we will come in this pod and we will not front with you. When we are feeling down, we are down. We are feeling up, we are up. And so we hope that authenticity shines through. No matter what is going on with us. But we will be back on Monday, like Jordan said, with a total eclipse of the pod. And I can't wait to catch up on ball over the weekend. Be well, friends.